Girl, Chime is back. This is all about the fee-free banking. Can you imagine?
I mean, I could have used this back in the day. Girl, like, what a racket. The fees are just crazy, and Chime is fee-free banking built for you.
Not to mention, they do a rewards thing, so Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards fee-free.
And direct deposit unlocks the most rewarding way to bank at Chime.
Right, and you're not switching banks, fam. You're upgrading to America's number one choice for banking with a Chime checking account.
Plus, you get premium travel perks like airport lounge access.
Oh my God, you know I can't live without the airport lounge access.
You know, and a 24/7 travel concierge included with your Chime card.
Yeah, you get savings that grow faster with a 3.75 APY. Fam, that's 9 times higher than the national average.
Yeah, we're doing it and we're not doing it with fees anymore. It's
exactly
enough already.
So fam, Chime is not just smarter banking. It's the most rewarding way to bank.
Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today.
Head to Chime.com/TCO.
That's Chime.com/TCO.
And fam, it only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Yeah.
So go do it and bank fee-free.
Like, we're not doing fees anymore.
I know.
Over it.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on a J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to Chime.com/disclosures.
I've been blowing my nose a lot today, and I feel like it's going to show up. I feel like I have like a Rudolph red nose on the video today.
It is a little red.
It is, right?
Oh, it's so cute, though.
Brought to you by New York City winter.
When it goes, or whatever. Isn't that what this sound?
Cute. Oh, I love it.
Hi, Jillian Bethvali.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Fam, check out our Patreon. We've got over 500 full ad-free bonus apps. They're so good right now. We're starting the Death in Apartment 403 or whatever.
Yeah, and we just did Stalking Samantha. I wrote some down because we can never think
of
any.
Oh, good for you.
Amy Bradley's Missing.
Yes.
A Body in the Snow, which is the first trial of Karen Reid.
Yes.
Fox Hollow Murders.
Oh, my God, yes.
Samantha.
Oh, my God, yes.
No,
I'm going to go back and listen to those.
They're good.
They're really, really good. We're also doing this thing now where sometimes in our after parties, we're giving you like follow-ups to some of the cases that we're covering.
Yeah, or deep dives that, you know, rabbit holes we go down or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, we did that for PI Moms. We did that for the Hannah Up case that was covered in the Vanished in Paradise. It was fascinating.
Yep.
So it's patreon.com/sugarmobsessed, or you just click on the link in the show notes. We make it super easy for you.
Super easy. We also have a Discord server.
The Disky. Wait, is that how we say it? We have a Discord server?
I know. I Googled it today and I was like, is it a channel? Is it a, what is it? But it's like, we have a Discord server and then there are channels within the server.
I love this.
I'm in it all
us.
The time, but I'm still new.
All right, great. That's wonderful.
Learning. It's very fun.
It's like an alternative to the Facebook group if that's not your jam, but we got the Facebook group too. So just join them all.
Yeah.
Girl, what are we talking about today?
The Carmen Family Deaths on Netflix.
The ocean carries a lot of secrets.
Linda Carmen and her son Nathan left and never returned from a fishing trip near Block Island.
It just gets deeper and deeper.
The freighter spotted Carmen floating alone in a life raft south of Martha's Vineyard.
Carmen's mother remains missing and is presumed dead.
People thought this poor young man lost his mom at sea.
Some of his story didn't add up.
Nathan was the firstborn grandson of a Greek dynasty. He was number one in grandpa's eyes.
Linda's father was extremely controlling.
When you're a self-made millionaire, sure, he stepped on a lot of toes.
Linda was very protective over Nathan. I think she'd protect him at all costs.
This isn't the first time tragedy has hit the Carmen family.
They felt Nathan had murdered his mother and his grandfather.
The ocean is terrifying.
I've been saying.
I know. And the thing
we've
that
we've been saying. The thing this is not a hot take, you know
no,
what I mean?
The thing that you were saying about the aliens, about how the aliens might be living in the ocean, you could be right. That documentary that we're going to cover eventually about the
Did
aliens.
Did I say that? That aliens
yeah.
are living.
80% of the ocean is undiscovered.
That's huge.
And they were saying that, like, if the aliens are, like, stockpiling their shit somewhere, it's probably down there.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Or the entire universe, which is huge.
Or
also.
That. Or that.
Which I'm just saying, that's one ocean on one planet.
All I know is that the aliens are here. That's all I know.
Do people not believe in aliens?
Well, after, what's the documentary called?
I don't know.
The Age of Disclosure. And you and I have already talked about it. We're going to figure out how to cover it. We're going to do it. It is insane.
Okay.
Anyway, back to the Carmen family deaths. We meet Eric from the Coast Guard. We begin in 2016. And he's telling us that the Coast Guard got a call that there was an overdue, meaning like a missing or late or hadn't returned, vessel in South Kingstown, Rhode Island.
So Nathan Nathan Carman and his mom, Linda, they went to an area south of Block Island, and now they are missing.
Yeah, Nathan's 22, Linda's 54. So Linda, the mom's friend, her friend Sharon is here, and she's telling us, like,
they would go on all these fishing trips, and just like any other time, they were going to ship out of Rhode Island, the marina there. She thought they'd be back the next day around noon.
This trip was no different from any other of their many, many trips.
Yeah, she was supposed to call Sharon around 1 the next day. When Sharon didn't get a call, she called Linda at 4. She's not answering. Sharon calls the cops. Get yourself a Sharon.
And Linda,
you're my Sharon. You'd call the cops.
Easy. But Linda also, like, we see the text at 10:54 the night before. Linda's like, oh, leaving the dock. I'll be in contact in the morning. Hope you're having a great weekend. Like, the plans were to speak. So when they don't speak, it's extra weird.
Makes you wonder later if Linda, the mom, did that on purpose. Like, just so you know, I'm not back by this time, it's weird.
Because that's interesting, because Saturday, so Linda sends that the night before at 10:54, and then by Sunday at 5:18, Sharon just texts, should I worry?
Yeah, right. I mean, everyone's
a little
worried.
Because you don't want to micromanage.
I know.
You know?
Also, like, you're on a boat in the middle of the ocean. So, like, I would worry even if she's fine.
And it's 5:18. Even if they went to lunch, like, what are you doing?
There's so much down there that you can't see. That's the whole point of the ocean, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, respect it.
I know. Look, when I go on vacation, sometimes we'll, like, go on a boat and I'll be swimming in the middle of the ocean. What am I doing?
But you
here?
Hate being, you I hate open
well,
water.
I
or
don't,
like underwater.
I like open water, but it's images of dark underwater where you can't see stuff that really scares the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
So when you're swimming, even when you're snorkeling, sometimes when it's too clear, I also don't like it.
Okay, you can't win.
I can't win.
I think we should just leave the ocean alone.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know what I mean? Only go up to your knees and that's it.
I love those stories where it's like Orca stole another surfboard.
Otters
are like, good.
I know. I also love seeing the seals.
I know otters are not in the ocean. I'm just saying.
I love watching seals jump onto boats to save themselves from the orcas, and then people speed off with the seals on the boat. And then when they're safe, they jump back in. Because I don't want to be with the people either.
It's the circle of life.
It is sad.
Anyway, Sharon calls the police and they put her in touch with the Coast Guard, and the search is immediately underway.
The Coast Guard searched the waters off Block Island and then Long Island, meticulously combing 62,000 square nautical miles, an area larger than the state of Georgia.
We had negative results on day one. After 6 days, search is called off.
I Googled, the nautical mile is based on the Earth's longitude and latitude coordinates.
Oh, that makes sense.
1 nautical mile equaling 1 minute of latitude.
Okay. No.
You know what I'm saying?
We're podcasters. We can't be expected to know that.
I'm
is this going to be on the quiz?
No.
Okay. Thank God. Thank God.
So it's always just like, whatever.
Yeah.
So after 6 days.
That's exactly right. That's the right answer.
Like,
yeah. It's
on.
Always like, whatever.
It's a lot of miles.
Yeah.
And it's scary and terrifying.
Yeah.
So after 6 days, the search is called off and they are missing for 8 days.
Well, on day 8, Nathan is spotted in a life raft 100 miles off the coast of Martha's Vineyard.
100 nautical miles.
You're right. You're absolutely
right. Which is basically like 115 miles.
Exactly.
That's all.
Totally.
It's not that different. I'm just saying. It's, I get why.
Yeah. We're converting like dollars to pounds all of a sudden in here. I can't do it, girl.
What am I doing?
You know what I mean?
Those are things where I'm like, how did you do this before the internet?
I know.
Like, those are things where I'm like, I know I'm just like some sheltered idiot, but like that, any kind of conversion or something like that is just like,
but
the fact
also,
that people did it naturally, like long division.
I know.
What the fuck?
Like longitude and latitude in general is like, what? It's like a graph for the Earth?
It's
no.
Cool. Like being able to understand a map, like that's amazing.
Well, Daisy's studying all that in social studies right now, and she has quizzes on it, which is why I have to now learn maps again.
Remember geography?
I'm taking the test. I have to remember all 7 names of the continents. Not today.
Oh God, we're not doing this.
We're not doing this. Girl, Chime is back. This is all about the fee-free banking. Can you imagine?
I mean, I could have used this back in the day.
Girl,
like, what a racket. The fees are just crazy, and Chime is fee-free banking built for you.
Not to mention, they do a rewards thing, so Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards fee-free.
And direct deposit unlocks the most rewarding way to bank at Chime.
Right, and you're not switching banks, fam. You're upgrading to America's number one choice for banking with a Chime checking account.
Plus, you get premium travel perks like airport lounge access.
Oh my God, you know I can't live without the airport lounge access.
You know, and a 24/7 travel concierge included with your Chime card.
Yeah, you get savings that grow faster with a 3.75 APY. Fam, that's 9 times higher than the national average.
Yeah, we're doing it and we're not doing it with fees anymore. It's
enough
already.
So fam, Chime is not just smarter banking, it's the most rewarding way to bank.
Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today.
Head to
Chime.com/TCO.
That's Chime.com/TCO.
And fam, it only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Yeah.
So go do it and bank fee-free.
Like, we're not doing fees anymore.
I know.
Over it.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on a J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to Chime.com/disclosures.
So Nathan Carman is found. He's on a life raft, and there's photos and video of the rescue. And Nathan is climbing up this huge ladder onto the ship, and he's walking around. And it's like, it's crazy to see, you know, like the search was just called off like a day and a half ago. And now this guy's here. Like, people can't believe it. And we hear the Coast Guard talking to Nathan, who's just very direct and just like, I need to know what happened. Not like, so glad you're okay.
Yeah.
Just, I need to know the details of what happened. I mean, where's your mom?
We're going to learn in a minute that Nathan is autistic. And so he speaks matter-of-factly, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the ways that his autism manifests in him. But he's telling us a little bit about what happened, like the engine compartment filled with water.
There was a funny noise in the engine compartment. I looked and saw a lot of water, which dropped out from under my feet. When I saw the life raft, I did not see my mom. Have you found her?
All of a sudden he's in the water and like he's asking if his mother has been found. And
she
has not. And at this point, she's presumed dead.
Now, Clark is Nathan's dad and Linda's ex-husband.
Yeah.
And he says like Nathan was very, very upset that he couldn't save his mother. And that was incredibly upsetting to him. And now Nathan isn't here in the dock. We'll get to that later. But we have a lot of footage of him talking about what happened.
Yeah. And his dad is just saying like at this point, like Nathan just wants to go home and be by himself. Like Nathan tends to isolate. That's one of the things that he does.
Right. So Nathan does an interview on ABC News for Nightline.
Yeah.
And they're asking him, like, how did you survive this harrowing ordeal? And he said, I basically just focused on my survival. He, like, regimented himself. The food pack said to eat 4 per day. He was spacing them out. Like, he is explaining that, like, that if you just stay focused.
Yes. And we'll learn later that he had, like, I guess on boats, like, the smart thing to do is have an if-you-sink bag. So he had a, like, if-you-sink bag, which is called something else. It's probably a nautical mile.
Definitely. 1.15 miles.
Exactly. But, like, they had, like, fruit packs in it, and he's rationing it out over the day, following the instructions of like what to do.
And I'm like, right, like totally heard. But when did your mom go missing? Because you were out there for 8 days.
Exactly.
So when did this happen?
Right. Have you not seen her since the boat sank, or was she on the life raft?
Heard about the food packs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they're probably disgusting.
I can't even imagine.
Whatever. But like, that is definitely interesting. We should know about that. We should learn from that. But when exactly did your mom go missing in these 8 days is what my first question.
So now we meet Evan. He's a journalist for Wired magazine. He lives in New England. He loves the water. And that's one of the reasons why he was drawn to this story. And, you know, he's telling us that like when the captain of the boat that saved, what happened was Nathan saw a ship passing and was able to flag them down. This ship saved him. And the captain says, now he's been on this life raft for 8 days, according to Nathan.
The captain of the cargo ship that saved Nathan Carman says the 22-year-old seemed healthy when he was rescued and did not appear to be suffering from dehydration, hypothermia, or anything else.
Circumstances like this don't happen very frequently. I mean, 7 days in a life raft floating at the continental shelf, that does not happen frequently at all.
Coast Guard Eric is also back to be like, a guy floating on a life raft for 7 days is unheard of. And like, he's like, never in my entire career have I seen anything like that.
And then what he's saying also is then to be totally healthy when you're rescued. Like, there are things that are just...
Yeah, like to have enough energy to like jump into the water, to have enough energy to pull yourself up on that life ring and then like walk up the stairs. Like, we'll get more into this later, but like, if you've been in a life raft off of your feet for 7 days, you should have lost a lot of muscular ability.
Right.
But then we're also going to be told that, no, like, I think your adrenaline kicks in when your life's about to be saved. That makes sense to me, too.
Absolutely. So Nathan's father says that because Nathan is autistic, the thing that helped Nathan survive those 8 days is the thing that will be weaponized against him after he was rescued, which is 100% true.
Yeah.
Also, just a quick note. I did my research. I asked the Discord about this. Speaking of the Discord.
Yeah.
On the best words to use, like, autistic person versus person with autism.
Yes.
Because I want to, you know, we want to be respectful.
You and I had a long talk about this before we started.
So everyone said the same thing in my research and the people that I spoke to personally. The community is divided. And it's all about your personal preference.
Yeah.
But since Nathan isn't here with us.
Right.
And we're taking the lead from his father and experts.
Yes.
I was told that it's okay to use autistic person and person with autism kind of interchangeably because it's a personal preference.
Got it.
That's what I learned.
And that's what we're going to do.
Wonderful. So before Nathan was rescued, the cops got a warrant to search Nathan's house and his car.
I'm confused on this timeline because they say prior to Nathan returning to his house.
Right.
I actually went back to get exactly what they said because I didn't know if it was before he was found or if it was after he was found, they got suspicious and then they got a warrant for his house.
My question that I wrote down is a warrant to investigate two missing people?
Right. Because what they find, they find documents that are concerning. So this is why I had the question. The document says,
this one's titled, "Why I'm Reluctant to Cooperate with the Police. Emotionally, I'm not sure that I can bear another interview." And he goes on to say, "Philosophically, the idea of proving one's innocence repels me." The next is, "Generally, the police are a corrupt and often criminal organization."
We're going to learn later. Nathan has had extensive experience with the police before this incident with it, where he went missing with his mother.
Right.
Which explains why this note would exist. But without that context, and in the timeline of the documentary, we don't have that context yet. So to me, that was very damning of like, he's expecting the police to want to interview him. I had forgotten that we're going to learn that he's been through a whole thing with the police already at this point in his life.
Yeah. I totally hear what you're saying. I just see it a little differently as like, because the cops see this as proof that Nathan had a plan to like kidnap and kill his mother on this trip.
Yeah.
And I don't see the connection because...
No, I agree with you at this point because we're going to learn that he's already been interviewed extensively by the police on another matter.
Right. Because what he's saying, number two, philosophically, the idea of proving one's innocence repels me. Yeah, because you're innocent until proven guilty. He's right. 100% right on that.
Yeah.
Generally, the police are corrupt and often criminal. Find the lie.
Yeah.
And four, keep your mouth shut and ask for a lawyer. Three,
yeah.
Okay, great. I agree with all of this.
All I'm saying is that if this was written before he went missing, this has nothing to do with the case of his mother and has everything to do with the case that we'll get to later that he's already been through.
And then now.
And he has every right to feel this way as he's writing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, as someone who hasn't been looked at for murder, yet.
Yeah. The day is young, girl.
Right? Like, I could have written that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Who's
to say you wouldn't find something like that? What if I got super amped up about a recording and I was like, I'm going to fucking let my feelings out in my journal and this is what I wrote? Like,
yeah. No, I'm with
any
you.
One of us.
All of this makes sense. All of this is fine. And it makes sense when you understand later what he's been through.
Right. Nathan agrees to speak to police. And I'm like, without a lawyer? Number four on your list specifically says that a lawyer advised you to remain silent. So I don't know why we're here.
And to me, this makes him look guilty because he's trying to look innocent.
Well, we have the audio, right? Yeah. And so Nathan tells police that he and his mother went to Stop and Shop. They got something to drink.
I love a Stop and Shop shout out. We're going to get a Dunkin' shout out later. This is a very exciting day for me.
The Dunkin'.
I know.
So
I know.
They drove to the marina. We have video of this, like this is all being confirmed. They loaded up the bait from his truck onto the boat. What's weird, however,
Nathan had mentioned that he had bought bait and things of that nature. He did buy eels. We found eels used for fishing in his truck, which is, you know, obviously interesting and concerning to us because if he intended to use the eels to go fishing, why would he leave the bait in his truck and not bring it on the boat?
They got eels for bait and they didn't use them. They didn't take it with them on the boat.
And like you can say maybe he just forgot it, but Nathan is pretty meticulous.
Sure.
Doesn't like he seems to me like the guy in the guy that would have a checklist of like make sure you have all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like and he didn't bring the bait for the fishing trip. Like without the bait, there is no fishing trip.
And to that point, when Nathan continues, he says they left the marina around midnight, which as we know is not uncommon for these trips.
Yeah.
But after they'd already left, they decide on the water, on a whim, to totally changed their plans. And now they're going to go to Block Canyon, which is a much longer trip. And we're told it's like 60 to 70 miles offshore.
And they're like, you don't do that as a casual boater. That's like open ocean. Like that takes a lot of preparation and planning. You can't just like, you can't change your mind from going a couple miles out to going 70 miles out.
Right. And this
I'm told. I know nothing about boating.
Again, to that point.
Yeah.
I Googled. I was like, what kind of boat is this?
Right.
This is not a boat I believe that you would spend a week on.
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, there's nowhere to sleep,
it seems.
It's a
31-foot aluminum boat. Now, please, boaters out there, correct me if I'm wrong.
Do we have any of those? I'd be thrilled
to
find out.
Plenty. Remember when we were a fishing podcast for a week?
That's true.
I'm not saying they're the same. I'm just saying, would you go out on this boat for a week? I don't think so.
Was that the plan? Were they supposed to go for a week?
No, but Nathan is saying on a whim, we decided to go for, you know, another 60 miles out or much farther. Not a week, but like several days.
It also seems like you would need a lot of gas. Like if you weren't planning for that trip, that seems like you wouldn't have it.
So all of that, the fact that this just doesn't seem like a boat you'd spend any like extended amount of time on, like a fishing trip, fine.
Yeah.
But also, what happened to the mom's phone? Because she was texting at the marina at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
And I'm like, even if you're like, oh, we'll leave the phones in the car overnight.
That you would never do that. Although, unless the idea is the phones aren't going to work out there anyway.
Right. But then why would you be like, okay, let me also not tell anyone that we're going to change our plans.
Right.
And go 70 miles out of the way when Sharon, Linda's friend, is waiting for her text.
And also, like, we're only hearing this from Nathan. You know what I mean? There's, like, no, like, the mom isn't here to corroborate.
Also, the boat is called the Chicken Pox.
I know. I don't know if I like that or not.
Boats often have names like this.
Yeah.
Okay. You know.
What? Is there more to that story?
I just had a Sopranos thing.
Oh.
Tony Soprano's boat is called Stugats, and so his girlfriend calls it the Stugats because she's Russian. She goes, oh, I don't know where it is, Tony. I think I left it on the Stugats. Anyway.
Oh my God.
Then they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, this is all weird, but the more Nathan talks, again, you should have listened to number four on your list. I'm confused as to why he didn't.
Well, but there's also so much more. Like, Nathan is telling them about what, like, the circumstances under which the boat sank. And he says, like, the engine sounded weird. I opened the hatch door, saw a lot of water. And they're asking him, like,
did you do a radio distress signal?
No, I did not. I didn't think we were going to sink. If you know you're sinking, you always get on the radio and say distress. But I knew that our distress signal wouldn't reach shore.
But it would reach other boats.
I didn't know where if there were any other boats in range. So
you didn't try.
Well, which is it then?
Right.
You didn't know you were sinking or you knew the calls wouldn't reach shore.
Right.
And that's when the cops are like, right, but the signal could meet other boats, like reach other boats. And he goes, well, I didn't know if there were any other boats in range. And the cop's like, you didn't try?
Right.
Which these are all like...
Right.
I mean, should he even be having this conversation with police? 100% no.
Not. Yes. No. And like, but then the dad is here to say, like, he 100% believes his son that it was an accident. If he could have saved his mom, he would have. We're going to learn eventually that Nathan and his mom have a super codependent relationship.
And it's bad.
But the way that they try to present it to us, the way that the family tried, they loved each other so fiercely. Mm-hmm. No, they were 100% codependent.
So, yeah, like, and again, it's a 31-foot aluminum boat.
Yeah.
The minute you see water where it shouldn't be,
right,
that's a panic situation because you're also further out without the proper supplies you would need 70 miles out. Like, that would, just to be safe, I'd be trying to signal everybody.
Also, like, not blaming the victims here, but, like, you don't also have to go out on the water in a 31-foot aluminum boat. You know what I mean? There are other things you don't have to, like, put yourself in the middle of the ocean.
Well, I think that's what the cops are saying here. The cops are like, the plan was to only go out a little bit for a few hours and come right back.
And that's why I'm saying that, like, I mean, let's just say it looks like a murder plot. You know what I mean?
Right.
It looks to all of us like he took his mother out there to kill her.
So the plan to go 70 miles on a whim just doesn't seem like something that even that his mother would agree to.
Right. But then Nathan is looking at the cops like, why don't you get it? You know what I mean?
Right.
Girl, Chime is back. This is all about the fee-free banking. Can you imagine?
I mean, I could have used this back in the day. What a racket. The fees are just crazy, and Chime is fee-free banking built for you.
Not to mention, they do a rewards thing, so Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards fee-free.
And direct deposit unlocks the most rewarding way to bank at Chime.
Right, and you're not switching banks, fam. You're upgrading to America's number one choice for banking with a Chime checking account.
Plus, you get premium travel perks like airport lounge access.
Oh my God, you know I can't live without the airport lounge access.
You know, and a 24/7 travel concierge included with your Chime card.
Yeah, you get savings that grow faster with a 3.75 APY. Fam, that's 9 times higher than the national average.
Yeah, we're doing it and we're not doing it with fees anymore. It's
enough
already.
So fam, Chime is not just smarter banking, it's the most rewarding way to bank.
Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today.
Head to Chime.com/TCO.
That's Chime.com/TCO.
And fam, it only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Yeah.
So go do it and bank fee-free.
Like, we're not doing fees anymore.
I know.
Over it.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on the J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to Chime.com/disclosures.
Treat Dad this Father's Day with great gifts from Menards. From levels, nailers, and drills to complete any project, to tool chests, recliners, and grills, we've got the perfect gifts to make this Father's Day one to remember. Stop by your local Menards today and save big money on gifts for Dad. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Also, there's a lot of drama in this family.
Oh, my God.
No one called me from the family. None of the three sisters, none of the cousins, did not hear from a soul. They felt Nathan had murdered their sister.
He killed our sister, his own mother. So yeah, we didn't want anything to do with him.
Linda's sisters did not attend her memorial service.
Like, they were not speaking to her by the end of her life.
And Linda's side of the family, to this day, has never reached out to Nathan or his father. She's three sisters and nobody called. This cousin that we meet didn't call.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, Nathan murdered our sister. Like, why would we even want to have a conversation?
The thing, too, that we're going to learn in a minute is that, like, this family was filthy fucking rich.
And it was disgustingly rich.
Disgustingly rich, but also, like, everyone is using the money to control everybody else. It's all about, this whole documentary is about money. And this whole family's dysfunction stems from the money.
So Charlene, Linda's sister, bad vibes up and down with this one. Charlene tells us about the family. This is a shout out to Natalie Grillo and Robbie and Len. There were four daughters, which is how Teresa Giudice, however she mispronounces her own last name. She has four daughters.
I hate it.
I know. So Natalie, whenever she says the word daughters, Natalie will type it out D-O-R-T-E-R-S.
Stop it.
But Valerie, Charlene, Linda, and Elaine. And Charlene is like, oh my God, Linda and I were best friends. We had an amazing childhood. One big, amazingly happy family. Not a single issue in sight.
But they start to say that Linda was a lot like our dad, John.
Linda was fun. She was very athletic. She was very much like my father. My father was, he was hard-headed.
John Chackles was my uncle. He was pretty much a force of nature. He was a guy that he was bigger than life.
Dad was a force of nature.
He was hard-headed.
Hard-headed real estate developer. So this guy is building nursing homes and assisted livings. Like, he's a fucking millionaire.
So we also meet Charles Chuck LaPenna, who, John is the patriarch of the family, John the father. John was his uncle, so he's Nathan's cousin.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, he was bigger than life. And so this guy was building assisted living facilities, but naming them after his daughters.
Yes.
So it'd be like Valerie Manor, Linda Manor.
Yeah.
And eventually, Charlene, come on.
I know.
It's like, we moved to like a fairly nice home in New Hampshire.
20,000 square feet with an indoor swimming pool that we see video of.
Charlene, it was an estate.
It was an estate.
It was not a house.
And Charlene's like, oh my God, we've got money now.
Well, she goes, one summer we had elephants there.
Yeah.
And it was the elephants that made Charlene think, wow, I guess we have money. Charlene, why are you already lying to me, girl?
I know.
Like, you have bad vibes.
And the undertone of everything that everybody in this family says is money. It's all about getting the money.
So Linda is Linda's best friend, Linda Gam.
Like, not good for a documentary, Linda.
Although,
you know what I mean?
I'm welcoming her because I think she's going to be honest with us.
Yes.
Because she says, I knew Linda, the victim, for 30 years. We talked about everything. And she, like, takes 2 seconds to say,
all the relationships were very dysfunctional. And her father was extremely controlling. So she said, I'm going to move to California. And he said, well, if you do, then I'm disowning you. She goes, okay. And she went.
So the father was extremely controlling, which, by the way, is what they mean by saying hard-headed,
yes,
a force of nature. Like, they're trying to...
But he's also incredibly violent, and he beats his kids.
Super abusive. So Linda wants to move to California, and the father threatens to disown her, and she's like, promise, and bails to California.
But we're going to see this so much. The dad, like, it's such a bullshit thing. He is using his money to control everybody in his life, and they're all kind of allowing it, except for Linda in this moment, when she moves to California and, like, joins the National Guard. Like, fuck yeah, Linda.
And so BFF Linda says that her three sisters are the complete opposite, which also probably means they were super jealous of Linda.
Yeah.
Because she, like, they wanted to money and they put up with this abusive father and she was able to get out.
I just wanted to point out, just to go back for 1 second, Linda joined the National Guard.
Yeah.
You have to be a very good swimmer to do that.
Oh, fuck.
You know what I mean? Like, that just occurred to me in this moment.
Because, yeah, they mentioned that a little bit, too.
Later, like, they say she was a really strong swimmer, but just now I was like, oh my God, the National Guard. Like, you're jumping out of helicopters into the ocean.
Shit.
You know?
So also, this whole disowning thing was an empty threat. It was a manipulation because Linda meets Clark and gets married and her father's in the wedding picture. So he was just trying to control them with money. Like,
and that's
saying.
The thing. So then Clark is here to say, and God damn it, my little New England heart grew five sizes when he said this.
This would work on you because this is how he tries to lure Linda home.
No question.
He's luring them back.
Yeah. The dad, John, says
her father, John, had promised if we moved back, he would develop a Dunkin' Donuts franchise for us. When we got back there, he reneged. So she ended up having to work for her father, which was not a good situation between those two.
He's going to open them a Dunkin' Donuts franchise if they come back.
He promises.
I can't imagine that's a thing anybody actually wants. Like, that sounds like an absolute nightmare to me. But at the same time, it's Dunkin' Donuts. You know what I mean? Like, I love that he's opening them a Dunkin' Donuts franchise.
Well, for whatever reason, he knew that this would get them to be like, okay.
Yeah.
So the minute they get home, he reneged. It was all a ploy to get Linda back home and back under his grip.
And to go work for him.
Because what we learn is that now, we don't get the details of why, but we're told that Linda is now in a position where she has to work for her father.
Yeah. And Clark, the ex-husband, is telling us, like, John was super volatile. He describes he would push and slap his wife and daughters. And we hear stories later about him doing this to Linda.
And Clark, the husband, uses the word constant. The violence was constant, he says. And now the cousin nephew is here to downplay it. He's like, you know, sure, the occasional fist fight, but it's not like anyone ever went to the hospital.
I mean, like, that is totally normalizing behavior. That is total bullshit.
I think it's really weird that Charlene and this guy don't have a bad word to say about the abusive father. I think that's weird. There's a lot of money involved and there's a lot of finger pointing, and they don't have a single true thing to say about him.
The reason nobody talks to Linda is because everybody else in this family sold their soul to get their inheritance.
100%.
You know?
So, and I'm like, can we move on from the cousin? But then we get crazy news.
Early Friday morning in Windsor, Connecticut, 87-year-old John Tsokalos was found dead from an apparent gunshot wound to the head. Investigators are calling it a homicide.
Elaine was the eldest, walked in and found him literally executed in his bed.
Investigators are calling it a homicide right away. And like Detective Mark is here to say, it was a fucking horror show. Like the shot to the head was so bad that you almost couldn't even tell what caused it. And like we learned there was no struggle. The guy was lying on the bed. That was like, he definitely knew the assailant.
Yeah. And so Linda, John's daughter and Nathan's mom, speaks to the cops and we see video. And now BFF Linda is like, I gotta tell you, Linda, our victim, always thought it was a mob hit because her dad was in construction and that can sometimes be linked to organized crime. He knew some shady characters. Like, could this be a mob hit? And the cops give us two reasons why it's not a mob
hit. This is your area. So you take it, girl.
One, they say the weapon was a large caliber weapon. Hits like that are usually like smaller because it makes this, a big gun is going to make too
much
noise.
Like a little purse gun. You got to take your little purse gun to your mob hit.
A little Dick Tracy gun. And two, it happened in John's house, which they say doesn't really happen either. Usually you disappear. I could go either way on that.
I don't know.
Sometimes they want to make a statement. You never know.
Right, they can put a horse head in the bed next to you or whatever.
I also read.
Don't do that, by the way. Why does the horse? What the horse do?
Look, I know.
Imagine waking up next to a horse head.
No,
that would be horrible.
That's a traumatizing scene in that movie.
I don't even know what movie it is.
The Godfather. Oh my God.
Can you tell The Godfather's like not on my list?
I know.
It's not Girls Just Want to Have Fun from 1985. I can't, if it's not that, I'm not watching it.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, I also read this guy, John, who was just killed, the abusive father, had this like 25-year-old girlfriend.
Oh my God,
and
really?
And she had another boyfriend that's a drug dealer. So there's like a whole other thing with he was like 80 and she's 25. Like there's that whole element too, which is all just speculation, but it's weird that she's not mentioned at all, right?
Yeah, I mean, these documentaries definitely like leave side stories out.
Whatever.
But like they're just saying like
now we're verifying that this crime that we believe is a break-in is not a break-in for the purposes of taking anything. It's a break-in for purposes of doing harm to John. Now we come to who else? Who else has intimate details of him? His family.
nothing was stolen. The intent was just to kill John. Who could it be? Must be the family, and it must be about the money. Because which, honestly, it must be.
An extraordinary amount of money involved. And now we get this horrifying footage of one of his grown-ass daughters. She's like 40. I think it's Charlene.
They're at like some backyard barbecue or something.
Some huge, not a backdoor, like a huge outdoor party that he probably paid
for. That's what I mean. Like backyard to them.
And like she's doing some toast. I'm pretty sure it's Charlene who's here with us. Daddy, I need some money. Daddy.
The Mona Lisa from Parks and Rec.
Right. Money, please.
Money, please.
And everyone is laughing. Like, it's so cute. And I'm like, it grow up. It pissed me off so much. And doesn't this tell you everything? She's 40.
I was just going to say, like, that is her being her true, authentic self, not even knowing she's on camera.
And everyone around her thought it was really cute.
The dad is laughing. He thinks it's up. The dad loved having that kind of control. I know. He loved having that kind of control over his family. He knew as long as he controlled the money, he controlled everybody.
I want to slow down on the money, and I want to do it slowly so that everyone gets, like, the weight of this.
Yeah.
So there was a living trust. The four daughters got, quote, Charlene goes, we got the same amount of money. No, Charlene, be honest about how much money it was. Because Clark, the ex, is like,
each girl was receiving, I would say, approximately $25,000 a month, notwithstanding what they would inherit if you should pass away.
They got $25,000 a month for nothing, just for being born to this
guy.
That's
their allowance.
So this doesn't even include the inheritance money,
yes,
which is forthcoming. And now we learn how much it is.
Yeah.
And it is insane.
$42 million divided by equally among the four daughters.
That's $10.5 million each.
Yeah.
After the $300,000 that they're just getting for fun.
And that's just like today. Like by the time he dies, who knows how much it's going to be? Like, you know what I mean?
And so you're sitting there and you're like, well, obviously someone in the family killed him. He was abusive.
Yes.
And they're sitting on $10.5 million and then some.
Yeah. And then we learn that Nathan, the son who we started with here, he becomes the prime suspect because he was the last person to see his grandfather.
This is also just such, like we were saying before, it's such a great way. I say, you know how I'm going to say the word great. Great way to manipulate people.
Yeah.
Because you can look at them and be like, do you want that $10.5 million or not?
Exactly. Right. Like, how much are you willing to put up with? The guy's in his 80s. How much longer you got to put up with this? Is what they're saying to themselves every morning. It's that scene from Heather's where she's in the bathroom and she takes a swig of water and spits it at herself. That's what Charlene does every fucking morning.
And like, maybe that's why people didn't go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Idiot cousin. Like, right. Maybe that's why everyone kept their mouth shut about it, because they're just counting the seconds until $10.5 million and then some.
Is it worth it? I mean, tell me, is $10.5 million worth it? Worth the lifetime of abuse and like suffering and soul selling? I think that's the part of it that's the worst. Like, that's why they didn't like Linda, because she didn't do that.
That's exactly what they were. Incredibly jealous of her.
Yes.
Incredibly jealous of her. I've said this to you a million times. My peace, I've learned, is more valuable than anything to me.
Yes.
Like, I don't care.
You can make your own money. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? Like, no. So Nathan and John, the grandfather, are super close. And we're told Clark, the dad, is like, he was the firstborn grandson of a Greek dynasty.
Yeah, he was number one in his grandpa's eyes. We are going to learn an interesting piece to this later. But like, we learned that Nathan was diagnosed with autism when he was 5. And like, we get this whole thing here about how he loved horses. His mom buys him a horse named Cruz. And we'll talk more about Cruz later. But like, Nathan was getting services from day one. Kids with these kinds of disabilities need this. And the grandfather absolutely hated it.
John was old school. John did not understand why Nathan needed help. And they used to get in arguments about it. Why do you need to take him there? Why do you need to do this?
He, like, didn't believe in getting help for Nathan.
And we're going to learn, too, that, like, there's more to the story with John's own family about why he doesn't like hospitals. And in a weird way, it at least lets you understand why he feels the way that he feels about certain aspects of this. But more than anything, like, he just thinks because he's the grandfather with the money, he can be in charge of what Linda does with her son's care. And Linda's not having it.
And at one point, we hear an argument from a home video. And Nathan is riding the horse, Cruz, who his dad describes as, like, Nathan's best friend.
His best friend.
Nathan absolutely loved this horse.
And because his dad says he didn't have other friends.
Yeah.
And it's like, because kids are the fucking worst.
But Linda, you hear Linda on the home video saying to her father, don't even start. And then just repeating, you weren't invited. You weren't invited.
Yeah.
So the big question is, with the death of the grandfather, the patriarch, whatever, does Linda, the mom, have an alibi? Because maybe she wanted to get rid of an abuser and also get money for her son. Turns out Linda has an airtight alibi.
Yeah.
So now the cops interview Nathan when he's 19 years old. He does not have anyone with him during this interview, which is unacceptable across the board.
Yeah. And this is when we start to understand how problematic it is for police to be questioning a person with autism without representation from somebody who understands why he's at least coming across the way that he's coming across.
For sure. And this is where we get the law enforcement to camera today, sitting down with the lights and everything, press and record.
His affect isn't right. And throw out all of whatever challenges he has through autism or whatever, his affect isn't right.
Despite his challenges with autism or whatever, his affect isn't right.
So, come
on. Do you hear yourself?
Do you hear yourself? No. I'm like, this is today they did these interviews.
Yeah.
So, Elizabeth Kelly, she's an autism specialist attorney. And she says, first of all, Nathan never should have been interrogated, obviously.
Even though I think he did it, I 1,000,000% agree with this.
100%. She says, people on the autism spectrum are frequently misinterpreted. And she says, the way Nathan was speaking, she describes it as very stilted terms, being, quote, robotic, giving details in a cold and calculating sounding way. And she's like, when the cops hear this, of course they're going to think he's guilty because of this. And that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. You know, and look, we see more of his interview with the cops, and he's like, you know, talking about his mother, saying, I don't want to talk negatively about my mom, but like, she did imply to me once that she hated my dad, so I don't know.
And again, just to be clear, this is the interview about the death of his grandfather,
yes.
The murder of his grandfather, not his mother. This is what we're talking about. He's 19 years old.
And like, at the end of the day, the cops say to him, like, our issue with you is that you were the last person to see him. That, like, that does make him a very likely suspect.
So what's Nathan's alibi? According to Nathan, he had dinner with his grandfather, great dinner, no arguments, everything was fine. After dinner, they go their separate ways. It's the middle of the night, and Nathan is about to meet his mother for one of their fishing trips.
Taking off at 3 a.m, like, holy shit.
He was over an hour late to meet her. And they're like, Nathan, we have a problem here because there's 1 hour that we can't account for. Where were you?
And I'm sorry, like, his explanation holds no water.
No, literally. And so...
Yeah. He just says, he says he was driving.
But I ended up getting off the wrong exit, and they get turned around. And I mistakenly took the exit on the north side of Hartford to go over the Connecticut River.
He says he got lost twice.
Yes.
He got off on the wrong exit, and then when he was trying to get back on track, he took another wrong exit and never once called his mother, who was waiting for him at 3 a.m., even though she called him 5 times.
Didn't take her calls. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know this isn't hard evidence, but like, it's enough for me.
It's something to... investigate further, I would say.
But, you know, we do also, like, we are told from Nathan's attorneys that John, the victim here, his neighbor heard a gunshot at 2 a.m, and they said, we can account for Nathan at 2 a.m. because he's on video at his residence at 2 a.m.
At the apartment. That's what we're told. We don't see it, but that's what his lawyers are saying. So if that's the case, if he's on video at 2 a.m., then...
Yes, yes, exactly.
And also, you can ask a lot of questions here, like, was that time right? What did they hear? We don't know
anything. It could be
anything.
Right, yeah.
But we're told that there's footage from Nathan's apartment.
Yes.
Also, now we're going to talk about polygraphs for 15 minutes, and everyone wants us to think that it's a major red flag that Nathan didn't want to take one.
Like,
shut up.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Whatever.
I mean, we are told from the cousin, so who knows if it's true or not, that, like, the mom did not pass the polygraph and was taking it several times. This is meant to introduce, like, did Nathan kill his grandfather, and does his mother know and is covering for him? Like, that's the whole next area we're going to talk
about. Right, because that's option one, or the other option is that they did it together.
Right.
But either way, the family thinks that Linda and Nathan were in cahoots somehow killing their father.
Yeah. And like, you know, the idea might even be that it had never been discussed between Nathan and Linda, but Linda knows he did it and isn't going to turn him in.
So let's talk about Nathan and Linda's relationship. And apparently it was very, very strained. And all of these fishing trips are part of Linda trying to make up for it.
And then we learn from the dad that Cruz the horse, who like literally was Nathan's like only friend, died when Nathan was a teenager. And this is a huge dramatic loss for Nathan. He takes it very hard. He wants to be alone all the time.
Linda had this 32-foot camper. So he would stay in there, come in for meals. And Nathan progressively stayed in the camper longer and longer and became worse.
This kind of isolation is serious. Like, he would stay in there for long periods of time. The dad is like, he was trying to take apart the microwave. He's not talking to anybody. He's literally urinating in bottles. Like, He's self-destructing in that trailer.
Yeah, so it was still on the property. It was like right outside, yeah. But like that's where he wanted to be 99% of the time he was in this camper. He wasn't bathing.
Yes.
And Clark, Nathan's dad, says he was going downhill mentally. So as a result, we don't talk about this nearly enough.
This is unbelievable.
Nathan is shipped off to one of those abusive, tortured teen camps in Utah.
We get the story from the dad that, like, they felt that they had no choice. The guys literally show up at 3 a.m. Nathan is sobbing and begging them not to send him. I don't know how any parent can get through that.
Let me tell you something. You have so much money. There are so many other options. Even if you're poor, this should never be an option.
Yes.
But especially when you have millions of dollars and the resources. And look, I watched all those documentaries. I know they trick the parents. I know the parents are the mark. I know they lie to the parents. I get that. But anything that starts with your kid being dragged out of your home, literally kicking and screaming,
screaming
is not good.
And sobbing. There's just no way.
That's the beginning. That's how it starts.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No. And this fucks him up irreparably.
Of course it does.
Whatever was going on with his mental health before he went there, this made it about 100 times worse.
We don't get any information. If you didn't know anything, you'd be like, wow, they sent him to treatment and he came back. But like, we don't get any information about how abusive these places are and what that he was abused and came back.
All we know is that like it was so abusive that it broke him. And we get this letter that he wrote to his priest. And I mean, this took my breath away. He wrote,
it's 11 pages.
The excerpt that we get reads, "The spread between my mother and I widened to equal the spread between heaven and hell.
The way some parents are committed to having their children grow up to be doctors or lawyers. My mother's dream is to have a nonverbal autistic child drooling in her living room whose diapers she can change until she grows old. My mother's pursuit of that dream and her bullying characterized my childhood."
My mother's pursuit of that dream and her bullying characterized my childhood.
Holy shit.
Like, that's a very different picture of Linda than we've gotten so far. 100%. That is like, that's like a Munchausen by proxy thing.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, keeping your kids sick and drooling and nonverbal and in diapers. Like that is at least how Nathan saw his relationship with his mother.
Well, the thing about those camps, I mean, or those programs, whatever the fuck you want to call them, those torture hellholes, is that, like, the kids are begging to come home.
Yes.
And the parents are told, don't listen. They're lying to you. They're manipulative. So if Nathan is reduced to writing this like 11-page letter to a priest, he was probably begging his parents who didn't listen. And again, I know that the parents are the mark. They are brainwashed. They're told whatever to get the money coming in. Well, get that.
And I also
still
think
abuse.
Yeah, no question. And I think that the one that he went to must have been some sort of like religiously affiliated thing, because the next whole section of this is all about how his relationship with God and the church was different when he came back. So like, we're told when he came back from the camp, he had a breakdown having problems with the church and the devil.
Well, obviously he's acting out. He was abused for, we don't know how long he was there. Like, Netflix, get a grip.
But it feels to me like it must have been some sort of religious thing, because like, that's a weird thing to come back with if it wasn't.
Or not. Like, maybe you just don't believe in anything anymore. And like, why would, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it just feels like either the family is super religious and we're not being told about it, or this program was that just seems like a lot.
Well, he comes home, he's acting out, obviously. And then another shitty decision is made because they throw him in this psychiatric facility.
Yeah, they could do anything. They sent him away twice. And as he's like begging not to go. And like, now this is where John, the grandfather, steps in, because Nathan is supposed to be alone in this facility, getting therapy every day, not communicating with his family. But the grandfather is going to see him daily, bringing him newspapers and pizza. And it's making Linda crazy. And like, John and the grandfather desperately wanted to get Nathan out of there.
He wanted to take him out. And that was it. John said he was going to cut the money. Linda said she didn't want the money. He came at her. Started to slap her.
And this is where we get from Clark, the ex-husband, a scene of him like slapping and hitting her, like in public, like in front of people. He doesn't care who sees it.
Right.
Girl, Carl, chime is back. This is all about the fee-free banking. Can you imagine?
I mean, I could have used this back in the day. Like, what a racket. The fees are just crazy, and Chime is fee-free banking built for you.
Not to mention, they do a rewards thing, so Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards fee-free.
And direct deposit unlocks the most rewarding way to bank at Chime.
Right, and you're not switching banks, fam. You're upgrading to America's number one choice for banking with a Chime checking account.
Plus, you get premium travel perks like airport lounge access.
Oh my God, you know I can't live without the airport lounge access.
You know, and a 24/7 travel concierge included with your Chime card.
Yeah, you get savings that grow faster with a 3.75 APY. Fam, that's 9 times higher than the national average.
Yeah, we're doing it and we're not doing it with fees anymore. It's enough already.
So fam, Chime is not just smarter banking, it's the most rewarding way to bank.
Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today.
Head to Chime.com/TCO.
That's Chime.com/TCO.
And fam, it only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Yeah.
So go do it and bank fee-free.
Like, we're not doing fees anymore.
I know.
Over it.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services from MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on the J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to Chime.com/disclosures.
And then we learn that there's a history of mental illness in the family. Kiki is John's twin sister.
Yes.
And Charlene, the sister with bad vibes, says she had depression or some kind of mental illness. Thanks, Charlene, for once again for your warmth.
Well, and this is where I was referring to this earlier. This is why John, the grandfather, feels the way he feels about sending people to, like, quote, mental institutions. Because his sister, Kiki, was sent to one, and it made her worse because she was given shock therapy treatment and, like, horribly mistreated.
Can I ask, like, why did anyone ever think that that was a good idea?
I don't know.
Like, how did we get there?
I can't imagine. I know.
Even explaining it and saying it out loud and a bunch of men being like, that sounds like a great
sounds like
idea.
A great idea.
Like,
I know.
And then when you...
They used to do it to gay people. You know what I mean? Like, thinking that it would convert them.
Right. And that, like, rewire you.
Yeah.
And then when you see it, like, who is in that room going, we need to do more of this to more people? It's really helping.
It doesn't...
I don't understand. It's so barbaric.
Well, but it also feels like the torture is the point.
Right.
It feels like the pain and the mistreatment and the torture is the point.
Because a lot of that old school thinking was like, this is all a choice.
Yes.
So you don't want this to happen again?
Also, like, they were subjects to be tested on.
Yeah.
I think it's
so disgusting.
Yeah.
It really
it
so
almost
unsettling.
Feels unreal. Like, you can't, like, you almost can't, like, you see, like, the scenes that we've seen in movies of it, but you feel like it can't have actually happened.
I know. Like, Wolf of the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
So John saw what was done to his sister, and he didn't want Nathan to go through that. Of course, that makes sense. I just want to say, Nathan needs help.
Yes.
So forcing treatment on him isn't going to work, but forbidding him from getting help also isn't going to work.
Yes.
So we have to figure out, and sending him to a fucking torture camp isn't going to work either. So, like...
And my question to this family with all the resources in the world, why are you trying the one thing that you have experience with that didn't work?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Like,
and also, like, at the time that this was all happening, autism was not, like, an unknown... You know, and once again, I'm not attributing his behavior to his autism. We're going to learn later that, like, he was an autistic person with a severe mental illness. So it's just like this family has all the resources in the world. Like, figure out what's happening here.
I know. So after Nathan was released from the hospital, he is still refusing to enter Linda's home and continue to live in the camper and wouldn't, you know?
I mean, he wants nothing to do with his parents. We're told that we barely touch on it, but he's not speaking to either of his parents.
No.
It's not just his mom. It's his dad, too.
Why would...
No.
You know what I'm saying?
And I'm on Nathan's side with all of that.
So Linda now decides to change her will. My thoughts on this might be a little controversial.
I'm
so
probably
with
what you're going to say.
We see video of Linda explaining this to Nathan. She's very calm. She's very straightforward. She's very robotic, which is what we... words that were used to describe Nathan. To me, it sounds like she's communicating in a way that Nathan would appreciate.
Yes.
Because she says, look,
you haven't been in this house, not even to wash your hands after fishing. This house is very important to me, has a lot of memories, has a lot of history. And I feel it really needs to stay in the family with somebody who does and will cherish it as much as I do.
I feel it really needs to stay in the family with someone who cares about it as much as I do. She's leaving it to someone named Michael. We have no idea who that is. We're not told. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But Linda says, and it's quick, and it's, again, very straightforward, and says, John, the grandfather, is leaving you, quote, more than enough assets, and you're the sole inheritor of my trust.
Yeah.
You have more than enough. I love you with all my heart. That's my decision.
She's in no way cutting him off. She's just saying, I want this house to be taken care of. And we're like, all on Linda's side.
Right. Like, sure, it's cold, but that's also a word used to describe Nathan. So I think she's like, he wouldn't really give a shit if she was emotional about it. To her, it's a decision. She's not cutting him off. It doesn't sound like a punishment.
No.
He's still going to be a millionaire a million times over. Now, you know, torture camp aside.
Yes.
I don't really see, like, the problem with this.
They're making a lot of bad decisions. This isn't one of them.
It just seems like you have everything else, but I'm going to give the house to someone who's not going to demolish it or let it fall into disrepair.
Exactly.
But you still get millions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, and like I think Linda's doing the right thing here.
This one decision isolated.
Yes.
This one little teeny tiny isolated decision makes sense to me.
So the cousin is back to tell us that one night when Nathan wasn't speaking to either of his parents, John, the grandfather, shows up with Nathan at this cousin's house and is like, he's going to live here now.
Right.
And because nobody questions the grandfather about anything, hoping for that check on the day that he dies, the cousin's like, okay, fine.
And also, speaking of money, the grandfather is totally bankrolling Nathan's life. He's giving him $100,000 a year just for existing.
Yeah.
And paying all of his rent or anything he needs, all expenses paid.
But it's certainly not out of the goodness of his heart. There's a lot that Nathan has to do to keep that, you know?
Right. No, 100%. So Nathan is just, he's not doing well. He's not getting the treatment he needs. And Elizabeth, the autism legal expert, says it's, and I was kind of like, oh, she says it very plainly. She says,
if someone has a major diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, but they refuse to accept the fact that they have a serious mental illness as well, that can be catastrophic, often with deadly consequences.
That is often catastrophic with deadly consequences.
And it made me wonder, like, if police can't discern, like, how what's really going on with an autistic person when they're interviewing them, like, can other professionals discern the difference between how he presents as an autistic person and how he presents as a person with a mental illness? Mm-hmm. Is all of it masked by the way that his behavior is because of his autism?
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, we were just talking about Hunted by My Husband, this, like, this tunnel vision that these cops had.
Yeah.
Like, can you stop? Like, I don't like the way he responded to me. I don't like his tone.
Right.
Can we step away from that for a minute?
And also, I think at this point, like, it should be noted that, like, Nathan's, his mental illness isn't manifesting violently yet. It's manifesting as depression, as isolating, as, you know,
antisocial.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that can also be written off. Like, that's just how teenagers are, you know? Like, it's hard enough to diagnose mental illness in people who don't have autism that also affects the way that they are perceived by the world. Mm-hmm. So he's got like the double whammy against him. And he also, we're being told, doesn't want to accept him about himself.
Right. And autism or not, there are plenty of people who don't want to accept their mental illness or whatever their diagnosis is. So like that's what I mean. There is a lot of things where it's like the autism to me isn't necessarily 100% relevant. And I'm saying that as like...
No, the only reason I'm even bringing it up at all is because I do think it affects the way the world sees him. So they might write off any behavior that isn't, quote, normal to the autism.
Right.
You know?
Now, here's something interesting. 6 months after John, the abusive grandfather's murder...
Very shortly before the homicide, Nathan purchased the weapon out of state with an out-of-state driver's license. He refused to answer any questions about it. He refused to produce the weapon. And at this juncture, law enforcement, to my knowledge, has no idea where that weapon is.
He purchased it out of state with an out of state driver's license.
Now, the timeline here is going to be a little confusing in the sense that we will be told later too quickly, that Nathan told the cops he does not own a gun. So that, like, he lied to the police about owning a gun. I just want to say that here because it comes up later and I was a little confused by it.
Yeah.
So Nathan lied to the cops about owning a gun, which to me is another check in the he did it category.
And when he's asked about it, he pleads the fifth, which, you know, could go either way.
And he pleads the fifth because he lied to the cops.
And he refuses to answer questions about it. He refused to produce the weapon. And to this day, we don't know where that gun is.
Yes.
And we're told by the FBI that the ammo used in that weapon matched what was at the crime scene. Now, Martin, Nathan's defense lawyer, is going to say, yeah, but that's totally conjecture. What they fail to tell you is that this could have been 600 different types of guns that had that same shell.
Well, there's two different things being said here. It's the kind of ammunition that gun uses, that kind of gun uses, mm-hmm. but you need the actual gun to determine if the bullet came from the actual gun.
Sure.
So, like, like, this is, a check in Nathan's like, yeah, we can't prove that that bullet came from that gun because we don't have that gun.
Totally heard. I guess that would mean more to me if Nathan had not driven out of state a week before a murder.
Lied to the cops about having a gun.
To buy a gun and then lie about it and is unable to produce the weapon in any way.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like...
No, I think Nathan did this, no question.
You know, like, I hear, like, totally hear you. Like, I think that's important, too. At the same time, there's a lot... It's not just like, this is a random gun they found on the side of the street.
It's like, just like an attorney being an attorney. It's like, wait a second. Like, or the cops being the... Because it is true that, like, that is the kind of ammunition that the kind of gun that Nathan bought uses, but like we just know from like doing documentaries that like each gun has a distinctive thing, like a fingerprint, right? Yeah. So like without that gun, we can't say it came from, but we can say it comes from the kind of gun that Nathan owns.
Yeah.
The cousin is here to say, I of all people was like, Nathan never could have been the one that killed my grandfather. Absolutely not. Until, big reveal, we find out that after the grandfather died, Nathan got an insurance payout of $414,000that didn't have to go through probate. And so then this is when we get the whole thing about like the memo that was sent before the grandfather died.
Right. There was this memo.
Yeah.
While Nathan's grandfather, who's bankrolling his entire life, no questions asked, Nathan wrote to his grandfather's trust and estates lawyer.
I think one of the biggest pieces of evidence in this case is he had sent a memo to his grandfather's trust and estates attorney prior to his grandfather's death with very specific questions, unbelievably specific questions, and many of them.
Unbelievably specific questions about the money and who gets the money and when someone gets the money and what would have to happen so that someone doesn't get the money and like what needs to happen so that Nathan gets all the money.
As a person who's not going to inherit $10 million, like when you're in a family that's dealing with that kind of money, are those kinds of emails common? Like, hey, just try to like understand what's coming to me eventually someday when somebody dies. Like, I feel like it can be seen nefariously, and also it's just like, hey, just checking in. Like, I know it's weird to talk about money, but I'm just curious what I'm looking at as I'm planning my future.
Sure. I mean, again, I don't have that either. Like, I don't have any experience with that. I've never dealt with any kind of estate. There's not $10.5 million waiting for me.
No.
So I don't know.
Because it looks bad. Like, as presented in the documentary, this looks bad.
And it's also weird because, like, it feels like to me, and again, this is just based on what we've heard, like, just ask him.
Yeah.
Why are we putting this in writing? It feels like if you're planning to kill somebody, why would you write a formal memo putting it in writing? Basically, like, tell me who I have to kill so I get all the money.
Well, but then, like, the reverse of that is, like, his defense would be like, but if I was going to kill him, would I put it in writing?
Look, I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's like, how they always get, like, that's what they always say.
Yeah. Nothing makes any sense.
Yeah.
Now, Nathan is never charged or arrested in connection with his grandfather's murder.
The police, I will say, they did write a warrant, so they wanted to get him, but the judge wouldn't sign it. So the police, like, they think he's the guy.
Now, sister Charlene is here to say something that she did not actually hear it when she said it, because she says
people had been through a trial and put on death row for less evidence than what they had on Nathan. And I just thought that was just insane. You know, why wasn't he even arrested?
And I just thought that was insane. Me too, Charlene.
I know.
But I think it's for different reasons.
Welcome to the resistance, Charlene.
Idiot.
I know.
What an idiot. Who says that? Do you hear yourself?
I know.
How do you not, as it's coming out of your mouth, like, no. Like, you just want to grab the words and put it back in.
Yeah,
that happens
to
me on a regular basis about some pretty fucking benign things.
Yeah.
You know, being like, oh my God. You know how many times I say to Tom?
I know.
I think I said this one thing that was wrong all the time.
Yes.
And for her to be like, people have been killed for less evidence. And I'm like,
I know. Charlene.
Do you hear yourself?
Yes.
But now we get BFF Linda talking about Linda the mom and how much she absolutely loved Nathan and did everything for him.
Yeah.
So this is also some conflicting information.
I mean, we also get a story here about a priest who finds Nathan and Linda at a church where Nathan is on the altar with his hands outstretched begging God for forgiveness and Linda's in the back watching. We're told this scene goes on for 5 hours.
Now, I'm not being argumentative with you. I'm just asking.
thing. Like, yeah. Who told us that?
The cousin told us that.
The cousin is
I know. And it's like, if that did happen, then it does imply that Linda knew and Nathan did it. But once again, it's like, the cousin also told us that Linda couldn't pass the polygraph test and she took it through. How do you know that, cousin?
The cousin is also like, that abusive guy who was beating the shit out of all the women in his life was totally fine.
Totally fine.
Abusive.
Nobody
like,
went to prison. I know.
Guys?
Yeah.
Like, Charlene wants us to think she grew up in a quaint little apartment.
But like, the thing is, like, at the end of the day, like, we're all just here because of the money. You know what I mean? Like, they all want to stay in Grandpa's good graces to get the check.
But what BFF Linda is saying is that
Linda was a wonderful mom. From the moment Nathan was born, Linda was trying to do the best for him. That's how her life was, just trying to help her son. She would see something in Nathan and then search and read about it, find a specialist constantly.
She claims that money was no object for Nathan's mom and that, like, all she wanted to do was research and help him and, most importantly, make sure he didn't grow up in this angry, violent household. And so the fact that her abusive, violent father was meddling and interfering so much was and using her grandson as a pawn.
But that's the thing, like, Linda, you keep saying you don't want the money, so then go back to California, take your kid and get out of there.
I know.
The Dunkies franchise didn't work out, and I'm as sad as the next guy.
But I think maybe, perhaps, she sees her son that needs a lot of help and she needs to bankroll.
Yes,
it.
And that I understand. You know, do anything like that for your kids.
You know what I mean?
I get it, yeah.
So,
and you put up with your shitty dad because you, Linda, you're the only one with an actual reason to put up with all this bullshit to get the money because your kid needs it.
And like, the teen torture camps are super expensive. That's why the parents are the marks. And then to try to undo the damage from the abuse of the expensive teen torture camp, like, this all costs a lot of money.
Oh my God, but they're just making it worse
they're
every turn.
They're making it worse at every 100%. So mom Linda now wants to bond with Nathan because he's pulling away because of the torture camp and then the facility. And so,
and also kids just pull away. You know what I mean?
That too.
Yeah.
But she's like, must be feeling guilty about all of it. Like, she just wants to, we're told all she wants to do is help him. And she fucking hates fishing, but she's doing it on a regular basis to be close to her kid.
Parenting is a jungle. I cannot tell you the amount of roadblocks I have to look at. You know what I mean?
What? That's a game.
It's a game.
It's
yeah.
A game.
I can't even explain it more than that. Like, you do what you got to do. Linda,
I see. Is it like a building game? It sounds like a building game.
It's
blocks,
one of those.
Right.
There's like the other one that's there's like the building game. And they like, yeah. I mean, if the kids had their way, they would do that and nothing else ever.
Is that like The Sims?
Yeah,
the Sims,
kind
you're like building
of.
A
yeah.
World.
Yep. I don't really get it. I don't really
but
understand.
You're playing it all the time.
I'm playing it all the time.
Do you have a little character?
No, I just follow Daisy.
All right. So she hated fishing. She's doing it anyway for him. That's what her BFF is saying.
Yes.
So we are getting some conflicting information. It's just all very complicated.
Yeah. And she's doing the best she can, you know. And then we learn that, like, after John's, the grandfather's death, Nathan, who now Linda's whole family is not speaking to Linda and Nathan because they think that Nathan killed the dad and Linda's covering for him. Nathan is also not being spoken to by the family, obviously.
After John's death, Nathan, he had bought property in Vermont. He was studying and learning how to do all the plumbing. He did the remodeling inside. He did it all on his own.
So with some of his inheritance money, he buys a house in Vermont and moves there to fix it up on his own.
Yeah, because he sort of is inspired by his grandfather, and like, his grandfather was a real estate developer, so he
it's
is
like a twofer.
He wants to
get out of town, and he wants to like build the house.
And he was like teaching himself how to do it. Like,
which
he's
is
incredibly
amazing.
Smart.
Yes.
So he was teaching himself how to do all like to like like rip up the floors and install plumbing, like truly like learning how to do it himself and just doing it.
Can I tell you, when I was a kid, my dad did this. We bought a house in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, and my dad decided he was going to remodel the whole thing himself.
Wow.
We spent a full year of our lives living in a house with no walls.
Wow. Drafty.
Yeah. Then my mom was like, I'm out of here and I'm a lesbian and I'm taking the kids.
Wow.
It was drafty.
Yeah. That would make anyone a lesbian, honestly. I can't take it anymore.
My mom's like, I'm a lesbian, but you know what is your final punishment? Stanley, I'm not going to fix this for you.
Stanley.
I could. I know. Typical. I was supposed to be Stanley IV.
Typical.
I know.
There are three others.
Yes.
Do you know them all?
I knew my grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah. Just died recently.
Who's the... Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Who are the other ones? He was probably like 100 years old.
He was very old, but my grandpa... I didn't see him since the time I was like 15 or something, but I saw a picture of him at the end of his life. Buff as hell, this motherfucker.
Like at the end of his...
Yeah,
wow,
like 88 years old, like ripped. It was wild.
Great.
You know what I mean? You learn something new every day.
May he rest.
I don't know.
So let's go back to Mom Linda's disappearance.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks after Nathan was rescued, he filed an $85,000 insurance claim for his lost boat. Now, what's interesting—
This is his undoing.
What's interesting about this is that the insurance company says no, 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 and sues Nathan because apparently Nathan altered the boat.
Yes.
So we're going to learn about trim tabs, everybody.
Oh, my God.
In case you already know about it.
I mean, the trim tabs are like the little metal things that you stand on when you're about to jump off the back of the boat.
They look like little flippers.
Little flippers.
Kind of like horizontal flippers.
Yeah.
But a witness says,
I didn't see any fishing poles. I didn't even see him with food.
It kind of caught my eye when I saw him leaning over the back and drilling two holes.
He saw Nathan Carman, and he's bending over and reaching to the back of the boat with a drill in his hand that had a hole saw bit on it. He removed the trim tabs from the boat that day.
The day before the fishing trip, he saw Nathan drilling on his boat. He was there for one purpose, and it was like to drill the boat.
This guy's name was Mike Iazzi. I just like the name. I wrote it down because I thought it was fun.
It's fun to say.
Mike Iazzi.
Mike Iazzi.
Yeah, he probably owns a donkey franchise.
Probably.
You know what I mean? Some of us get to live the dream.
Some of us do.
You know?
Some of us don't.
Exactly.
Says the girl without a donkey's franchise.
I want it to be like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, where it's like Mike's Dunkin's Donuts.
That name makes me crazy.
Ruth's Chris.
Chris.
I know. It's because Ruth bought it from Chris. But she loved it so much that she didn't want to change the name.
Well, she did.
Well, she did. You're right. But she kept Chris's name on it.
Ruth, you still changed it.
Ruth, you did.
Don't split hairs with me here.
Answer
you changed
for yourself,
it. And
Ruth.
Now we got random S's and apostrophes everywhere.
You're right about that. Ruth's Chris.
You still changed it, Ruth.
Anyway.
So trim tabs. So Nathan had removed the trim. They're like these metal flaps on the back of the boat, and he took them off. And so what they're telling us is that he created a situation where there are now holes in the boat.
This is how the boat sinks. And the only reason we know this is because Nathan filed that $85,000. Yeah. If he had never filed the claim, if he just let that go, they never would have gotten him on this.
And so then the other point is like, so then if he did it, then why would he file this claim if this is just going to be his undoing?
But that's the whole thing, right?
But like a judge rules that the boat sank because of what Nathan did to the boat. So he loses the insurance claim.
The judge says direct or indirect result of his faulty repairs. So like the judge is leaving the door open for that he did this on purpose.
Well, now the feds are involved.
Exactly.
So because they say that Nathan set out to kill his mother and his grandfather. And this is all about getting all of the grandfather's money and maybe a little bit of revenge.
Yep.
Too. So he's arrested and charged with murder on the high seas, which I'm telling you, I'm shocked that's not the name of a Columbo episode.
Oh, Murder on the High Seas, I feel like it's got to be an Agatha Christie
Murder
book.
On the High Seas.
It's so good.
I'm like, that's not, we have Murder by the Book.
He's got to walk the plank eventually.
We have By Dawn's Early Light. Oh, we have the Columbo
so
titles.
So Dark the Waves on Biscayne Bay.
Oh my God. Not a Columbo episode.
No.
So Nathan claims he was at sea for 7 days in the life raft. And this is where they really break down why that's impossible. People are saying the word, it's impossible. There's no way that he could have been in the raft for 7 days is what we're told.
Yeah. And so like, once again, like Eric from the Coast Guard is just saying, like pointing to like his ability to like swim in the ocean, pull himself up on the life ring, walk up that ladder. They're saying it would be absolutely impossible.
Physiologically, they say there's no way.
Nathan's attorney is bringing a damn good looking Navy SEAL, a guy named Mike. And Mike is saying,
in that situation, when you know that's your potential rescue, possibly your only rescue, your adrenaline's going to kick up no matter how exhausted you are. And I've been in those situations where extreme heat conditions in Iraq, guys are dehydrated, they're exhausted. And when we had an extract under contact, you saw the guys almost pop out of that exhaustion, that dehydration, and go into action.
It's all the adrenaline.
Exactly.
Right.
So, is that what happened with Nathan?
So it's a battle of the experts.
Yes.
One side is saying there's no way this is possible. The other expert is saying, well, it's absolutely possible. Okay.
Remember the beginning when I said these boats have like, if the boat sinks bag, it's called a ditch bag.
Oh, I like that.
A ditch bag.
I like that. Like a go bag.
Yeah. Or like if you gotta ditch the boat and get in the life raft.
Totally.
It's a ditch bag.
So excellent segue.
Thank you so much.
What did Nathan have in the life raft? He had emergency food rations. We're not sure how much or how long it would last.
Yeah.
And now they're going to spend 15 minutes on this handheld emergency water maker. It turns salt water into drinking water. And everyone is going to say how insane this is. And they've never once heard of anyone ever having this.
I know.
Again, no pun intended. Does not hold water for me. I think it's actually a really smart thing to have.
I don't know why you wouldn't have it.
I don't. When
they were, I was like, this is the big,
you know what,
like,
I mean?
Bum, bum, bum moment. He had something that turns water into
also,
water.
Next time I go to the beach, I'm going to take one of those with me. I'm not going to go all the way to the fucking bar for a glass of water if I can just do it by magic like Jesus in the ocean.
If I had a 31-foot aluminum boat that looks kind of ranky-dink,
yes,
I'd want to be like, when this thing sinks, when I'm in an emergency situation, I'm going to get a little thirsty out there.
Why wouldn't you have, like, a ditch bag?
Why
with
isn't
all
that
this
standard? I don't get it.
Unless it weighs 700 pounds and costs $1 million, why wouldn't every boat have one of these?
It just seems totally reasonable and normal.
Suddenly I'm a Nathan didn't do it or...
But like, because now we're going to hear from John Elder Robison. He's the defense's autism expert.
And he has autism.
And he says, he was like, this makes total sense. Like,
yes.
He says...
You had Nathan's autistic people like me, and by extension, people like him, those traits to have structure and planning are part of our autism. But you know, people tend to think we are up to something, we're tricky, we're devious, or we're just dummies.
It's a, quote, trait of autism. And it's not unusual that Nathan would have everything from top to bottom that you could possibly need, whether it's realistic or not.
Yes.
And he said, like, this is a total nothing burger for me. I agree with this guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, I have the same traits. Like,
right.
And he says, people tend to think we're either up to something or devious or that we're just dummies.
Yes. I mean, and that was very well said.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think you got to be up to something to be the guy with the ditch bag with the water maker. You know what I mean?
I think that you should have those emergency bags on anything where, like, you could...
We should be changing laws. You should have to have a ditch bag with a water maker.
Yeah, I think that's crazy. I think it's crazy that the FBI's like, see? And then they're like, shut up, Jillian. We have more evidence. And I'm like, whoa, FBI, take it down a notch.
And this evidence is compelling because they're saying that, like, science tells us that there's no way he could have sank where he sank at the time he said he sank based on where he was found in. And for this, they're using a thing called drift analysis, which, like, we're going to be told it's junk science, but then we're told
it
absolutely...
I'm with you. The Coast Guard.
Yeah.
They have ways to figure out how far something or someone will drift and in what direction. And they use, like, the weight and the size of the vessel, the current, environmental factors. And all of this information is constantly
being updated.
Monitored by, like, buoys and sensors and satellites. It's a real thing. It's like,
and it's used by, like, major climate scientists. Like, it seems to be at the very, it's like, okay, if they were off by like 150 feet or whatever, fine. But like at the end of the day, Nathan was 80 miles from where he should have been if the boat went down where he said it went down.
According to the drift analysis.
Yeah.
And so the defense is like, bah, junk science. And the journalist is like, yeah, no.
No.
Like, this is just data, and data doesn't lie.
Yeah.
So.
And honestly, I feel like we can take the journalist's word for it because he's the most impartial person we're going to meet here.
He's the one that was like, first I was amazed and then I was confused and concerned.
Yes.
So this is now where the prosecution or the FBI or whatever starts to lose me entirely.
Yeah.
Because their theory, I think, is, in a word, ridiculous. Because they have all of this evidence, but then the way they tie it all together, I'm like, really?
That's interesting, because I thought this was plausible, like what he did.
We're going to get into what their theory is, which I am a little confused by, but the last big, like, bum, bum, bum,
is
they can't find the life raft, because very soon after Nathan got off the raft, it, like, fully deflated and sunk into the ocean.
Like, he sunk the raft. Like, he got out of the raft, and he stabbed it or broke it in some way that made it sink.
Because he was on it perfectly for 7 days, and then the minute he's off it, it is now going into, like, the best crime scene ever.
Well, because what...
The ocean.
Right, the
it's
ocean.
Gone forever.
Right. Best crime scene for the killer.
For the killer.
Because what they're saying is that...
Nathan did not want us to see the condition of the life raft, what was still on the life raft, what equipment he did or didn't have on the life raft, because it may very well demonstrate that he was not on that life raft for 7 days.
There's no way he was on that life raft for 7 days. And that he needed to sink that life raft so that we wouldn't be able to tell that he wasn't on it for 7 days.
And no one has answered, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe it was just quick, when did his mother disappear?
Well, I mean...
On what day?
There is no answer.
There's no answer.
We'll get Nathan's version of it, but we don't really know.
But early? In the beginning of the week or at the end of the week?
We don't know. We don't know. Well, okay. I mean, I don't think that she would have stayed away from her cell phone for 7 days willingly.
Of course. No. I just mean, in the journey of this harrowing ordeal.
I think that she died on day one.
I agree.
But, like, the prosecutors are saying the most plausible scenario of what really happened was that after leaving Judith Point, which is apparently like where they took off from, on Saturday night, he killed his mother, disposed of the body nowhere near Block Island, which was where their original intended destination was.
Which is where the Coast Guard would be searching.
Which is exactly where the Coast Guard would be searching, exactly. And then he goes to the Connecticut coast because it's where he knows, and he knows he can hide in plain sight because he knows the Coast Guard is going to be searching that area around Block Island. So he gets out of there, goes to the Connecticut coast where he knows it and he knows they won't be looking.
But that's the thing that kind of was like, that doesn't that feel like a big risk? That he, because they say, oh, you know, like, he was on the coastline and there are plenty of nooks and crannies that he could hide in. And I'm like, for someone who we're told is meticulous and has all of his emergency stuff and like all his rations, it feels like a big risk to me. But maybe I don't know anything about this kind of thing.
I mean, to me, it just seemed like the easiest, most calculated solution.
He did a look over there.
Yeah. And like the boat is nondescript. I don't see like a name on the boat, even
check
if like,
box.
But I don't see it written on the boat. You know what I mean? Is it?
Is it? Let me check the picture. Let me go to the videotape. I have it. Oh, God. Now I'm in the nautical mile part of the program. It says chickenpox on it from Plymouth. And it says the location.
Well, okay, then. Then I do think that there's a hole in the story because, I mean, unless he's able to cover the boat, it's a small boat. Like, if they're saying he's, like, slipped into some port somewhere where he's able to cover the boat.
Put a piece of tarp over that.
Yeah. You know? I mean, like, this does make sense to me that, like, he hides her in plain sight. Then he's, like, got his nose to the ground about big cargo ships that are going to, because that cargo ship left from Providence. So maybe he is able to learn when a big ship that will be passing along this way is going to be leaving. And then they say,
after the Coast Guard had called off their search, he gets in the chickenpox, guns it out to the open ocean.
He then got into the life raft and scuttled the boat.
He would have sunk the boat shortly before the freighter came within view so that he would be properly positioned to become rescued.
Sink the boat, get into the lifeboat that he's only in for like an hour.
Because after the Coast Guard calls off the search, he's like, oh, okay, great. Like,
exactly.
Now I can sort of reappear, is what they're saying.
Yeah. And like, this makes sense to me. Like, he sunk the lifeboat. Like, there's no way, even in his own story, that it was perfectly floating for 7 straight days and it just happens to sink the minute he's rescued.
Because what they're also saying is that, like, so after the Coast Guard calls off the search, that's when he guns his little boat out into the open ocean.
Yes.
And gets into the life raft, and he deliberately sank his own boat thanks to the holes he drilled.
Exactly.
That's what they're saying. That's why, like, we can't find the boat, and that's why this and this. So that's what the theory is. But I am a little bit stuck on, like, he's just, like, chilling in the Connecticut, on the Connecticut coast.
But I mean, like, that seems possible to me. The thing that nobody mentions, but that really stuck out to me, was he's not sunburned. You know what I mean?
That's a huge thing.
And nobody mentions it. They say he's not dehydrated. I mean, he's got the water maker. You know what I mean?
This is why.
Got his ditch bag. But he's not dehydrated.
Yeah.
And, like, we see the life raft. I mean,
or weak in any way. Like, like, those rations are meant to keep you alive, not fully sustain you.
Exactly.
You know, like, and you should be weak, and because we're told, like, he's not using his muscles at all.
Yeah.
Allegedly, or whatever.
Yeah.
And also, the ocean is a great place to commit a crime.
Exactly.
Evidence is lost immediately. It's enormous. It's
all those aliens down there.
And whales.
You know what I mean? But, like, you know, his own lawyers are like,
what's the kid going? Here, there, he's evading the Coast Guard. That's what they're saying. And did he plan that this Chinese junk ship that just happened to be going by, that almost ran him over, I understand, that he would be picked up? It's nonsense.
They're like, this is insane. They're saying what you're saying. How could he possibly outmaneuver the Coast Guard? How could he hide in plain sight for 7 straight days?
At the very least, it just feels like a risk for someone who, if he was so meticulous about everything else,
but
it feels like a big thing to leave up to chance. But I don't know anything.
High risk, high reward. You get away with this, you get all your mom's money.
Or as they say in Aida, fortune favors the brave.
Fortune favors the brave.
But then they show us footage of Nathan talking about his mother's last moments, kind of.
Yes.
And also, this is like, this is his deposition. He's objecting in his own deposition. Like, doesn't he have a lawyer there?
That's what I said. Like, I'm like, is he representing himself? Because we don't hear an attorney for him.
We don't
hear
anyone step in for him.
Yeah.
But could there be a lawyer that's silent? But the lawyers that we met would not stay silent, but whatever.
Right.
So Nathan says he was in the water. He was watching the boat sink. He said, I did not hear my mom. I didn't hear anything.
And, like, that's what they're saying. But, like, your mom's a strong swimmer.
And the boat's sinking. Would one of you be screaming
or
something?
The boat is, like, sinking. And, like, he seems to not have an answer. He's stumbling over his words. He doesn't have an answer.
He seems like he's in distress answering this. Like, is that his guilt? Is that trauma because of the horrible thing that he just went through and surviving after all that time? I don't know.
Right.
So we get the on-screen text that lawyers spent over a year preparing for the trial, which was set for October of 2023.
Yeah. And just before the trial,
we begin at 5 with a shocking update on a case we've been tracking for years. The man charged with killing his mother off the coast of Rhode Island has died.
Corrections, Nathan Carman was found unresponsive in his cell overnight.
Jail officials say Nathan Carman took his own life while awaiting a murder on the high seas trial.
Nathan kills himself.
Yeah.
That took my breath away. I did not see that coming.
I wasn't expecting that either.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, why?
Right. They say that he killed himself using prison shoelaces.
But they don't that's why they don't have shoelaces in prison.
And there's no suicide note. The dad is devastated, you know. The dad is sticking to his guns. There's no way Nathan ever could have killed his mother. He loved her. He would never have harmed a soul. You know, Charlene is saying, like, the family mourns the loss of Nathan as a kid. And she's crying over the fact that she wasn't speaking to her sister at the time that she died.
Well, choices were made, Charlene. And it's weird that you didn't have a bad word to say about your abusive father, and he had a lot to gain from his death. Is all I'm saying.
Exactly. And from your sister's death, like, if we're being honest.
That's what I mean. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, that's what I mean. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm annoying.
No.
Linda Carman was officially declared dead in October of 2023, and the investigation into her death has been closed.
But this is what happens. Like, the murder of John, the grandfather, is now classified as a cold case. No other suspects have ever been arrested. And this always happens too. After his death, all charges against Nathan Carman were dismissed.
Yeah.
That happened to fucking Robert Durst.
I know.
You know?
I know.
And that's it. I mean, it's a mystery, but I think he killed them all.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, God.
I know.
No.
Sorry, that's a Durst throwback, everybody.
No.
I think he did it. Do you think?
I there is so much evidence that I can't look away from that I can't explain any other way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it has, please understand how I'm saying this, has nothing to do with his autism.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Despite the fact that I think he did it, he should not have been questioned in the way that he was questioned.
No.
Like, no.
No, and not all of it could be like, well, he's meticulous. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's just like,
yes.
It's not connected to me. I'm looking at the evidence here. And
no,
the
I mean, I'm looking at, like, the missing hour when his grandfather died. I'm looking at, like, all of the ditch bag and the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fact that he wasn't, the lifeboat sank the minute he got out of it.
I know.
Come on.
I know.
He was in it for 7 days, but then it just sank.
And also, if we're going to have cops tell on themselves that they don't give a shit about, like, people who aren't, quote, normal.
Yeah.
Can we, like, try to do something to, like, fix the system in any way? No? Great.
No.
Moving on.
Oh, my God, girl. We did, what's it called? The Carman family murders.
The Carman family deaths.
Oh, you're right. The Carman family deaths.
Very, very, very important distinction made by Netflix.
Fam, join our Patreon, but only if you want more amazing, fun content. There is so, so, so much stuff over there.
Many things.
Just go to the show notes. You can click right to it. Join our Discord, also in the show notes.
Yep.
What are we doing next, girl?
Oh, everyone, gird your loins, get ready. Homicide Hunter, The Man with No Face, starring the one and only Joe Kenda.
Oh, we did it. We got to that fast.
We got to it fast. So it's on Discovery Plus. He has three of the, he has like 100 episodes of like four different shows.
Okay.
But he has like three or four full-length docs. I figure we'll sprinkle them in.
Oh, let's do it.
So this is The Man with No Face. This is the first one that's out there. It's on Discovery Plus.
All right.
We're getting Joe Kenda on the calendar.
Well, here we go, fam. Stay tuned for the trailer for that, and we love you.
We love you. Stay safe, please.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I was good at what I did, but this case was so different. When you have no place to go in a murder case, it eats at you. What did we not see?
In 1988, DNA was just beginning to be a forensic tool.
He's still out there. That's why I don't sleep at night.
What kept this case alive was everyone involved knew the DNA was coming.
Well, my, my, my. That is what we've been waiting for.
Homicide Hunter, The Man with No Face. Wednesday, March 8th at 9 on ID.